This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 20th of November, 1952. The title of this lecture is Creative Processing, Validation of MEST. This lecture is 67 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
I want to cover with you creative processing. And make this session tonight what is meant by and what is creative processing, straight on through. And I'm not going to spare any punches or something of the sort. Creative processing is that process which was developed in this, the fall of 1952. In order to break the agreement the Preclear has with the MEST universe, and in order to permit him to handle those things which he is sure he cannot handle, and therefore increase his self-confidence and self-determinism on all dynamics, and so bring him up as quickly as possible to the highest level of processing there is as an exclusive process, postulate processing. The senior process anywhere is postulate processing. That's the process that's the kingpin process of all the processes. And postulate processing should bring an individual to a point where he says, now you see the two doors down at the end of that room? And the class can then leave by two doors. That is your ultimate on that subject. So you see, we don't have any the mild little tiny picayune goals in mind. Now, creative processing permits an individual to get out of the rut of having universes created for him and permits him to step over and create himself some universes. Actually, his universe is as good as he is able to create it. This universe is as good to him as he is able to create and gild it with his hopes and illusions. The values which he is able to assign to this universe are the only values which he has in this universe, unless you break him out of this rut. Now, that's a terrible rut to be in. Supposing you had to live the next 100 billion years, numbers don't matter much. Supposing you had to live the next 100 billion years with a pig sitting in front of you, a small pig. That's all. Your sole amusement would be, this pig is beautiful. Now, let's see, how will we make this pig beautiful? And while your time away in trying to make this pig something except a pig, with the pig staying relentlessly a pig. Now, you've consumed about 76 trillion years at this game. I didn't mean to put it quite as bluntly as that, but the fact of the matter is that you've got a universe, you got a universe here, which is a super acquisitive universe. This universe has the acquisition of a pig's appetite, certainly. This universe tells you, now listen, you can't create energy. We're doing you a big favor, because we're going to give you some of this energy, and you can't create energy, and we're going to give you some of this energy, and you're going to operate here in this universe, and we're letting you do that. Actual truth of the matter is, evidently, this universe depends for its entire substance upon what you create and put into it. Much worse, it depends on it. Now, you take what you might call the Elder Construction Corps. They were the Thetans that came in, or maybe the Thetans that dreamed up this universe are still here. It's very customary for you to think of the fellow who would dream up this universe to still be sitting up there in a white robe or something of the sort, you see, and monitoring it. But that is not the way this universe behaves. The chances are much better of him being the central core of Jupiter, Jupiter being the accumulated ridges which he has, or the central core of the hub of the galaxy, just plastered with MEST, 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 and being only in present time now, and this terrific desire to have, fastening him with all of this stuff which he believes is matter and which you are now adding to. You keep this universe going. Did you remember Peter Pan? Peter Pan rushes to the first front part of the stage, and he says, please clamp your hands, something of that effect, and say you believe in fairies so that you can keep Tinkerbell from dying. Now, that's a very, very light little version, a tiny little version of probably what's going on here. You can stay here and go into such complete agreement that you are just an object in this universe. Yes, yes, you can do that. Nobody's going to come to the front of any stage, however. You can get corroded with mess, you might say, to a point where you can no longer communicate. But as long as you believe in this universe, it'll continue to exist. This is a self-perpetuating, expanding universe. Now, one of these days, myself and some of the other boys are going to go out into space, and we're going to start to create energy. This universe is hungry for energy. So we just go out and create a little energy. It would be an interesting thing to create enough energy, for instance, to upset the gravity balance of the sun. just enough to upset it. Just a little more mass. Now, this thing called gravity is this thing called have. Gravity is desire to have. The sun has a planet. These lines of force could be considered to be havingnesses. The sun has a planet. The sun evidently wants a planet. The earth wants the sun. And when you're examining the, quote, miracle of nature, you're examining the gall-blamedest, doggondest, gee-whizzinest piece of greed you ever looked at. Because think of this thing, cohesion of matter. Matter's got to have. If you think this over for a little while, you're going to get the spooks, by the way. You can actually tune up and feel the greed of Earth. Has. It's got you. It pulls you right there. Only it doesn't want you as a thetan. It wants you as messed. You could get that. You've got Earth's pull on you, and your pull on your facsimile bank is I want to have. Have. And as long as you have a have, you have. There's time. If you don't have a have, you haven't got any time. Very simple. It's very interesting. This tells you that you must have an overweening desire in some direction or other in order to pull a whole bank in on you so heavily that parts of it become obscured and mysterious. And you say, I wonder where that facsimile is. It must be, there's something influencing me. There's something influencing me, and I've got a bad leg, and I can't understand why I got a bad leg. I'd gladly get rid of this bad leg. Pull. Gotta have it. You know, that's an awfully conglomerate sort of a thing if you stop and think about it. The fella has to hold on to what he doesn't want because he's got to have what he... See? Zing, zing. There are two categories, as have and not have. And both of them add up to time, because if you don't want something which exists, everybody says this exists, and you say you don't want it, you say, I don't want it, I don't want it, I don't want it, I don't want it, I don't want it. It's right there, you see? Why? You've admitted it's an object. Now, if you've got to have something, gotta have it. There it is. You've admitted it's an object. The second you admitted it's an object, you give it duration. And it has duration only to the distance that you like it or want it. So we have the game of have being subdivided into desire, enforce, and inhibit. And that is the game of time. And one desires, enforces, inhibits. Well, now, ARC, you know, a wonderful poet over here one time, his name was Alexander Pope. almost completely guarantee that Pope, an hour or two spent with Pope will throw any manic into his depressive cycle. And a few days spent with Pope will just keep him there forever. such touching little lines. But one of them is, "The boast of heraldry, the pomp of power, and all that beauty, all that wealth there gave, away to light the coming of the hour, the paths of glory lead but to the grave." Isn't that cheerful? Anyway. Anyway, the Pope actually did sound a certain truth, and that's why one can't quite get away from that truth. The paths of havingness lead right straight to being missed. If you have enough, you see, the more you have, the less you do. But the more time you have, the more you have. But the more you have, the less time you have for yourself. And see, there's something wrong in there someplace. The more you have, and if you have enough, you are, but if you have enough, you're dead. You know how much most people inherit after a few lifespans or a few spirals. You know what a spiral is, by the way. Something you won't find in What to Audit. There's a line followed up in What to Audit. It says people live 34,000 years or 50,000 years, so that is the average span. That's the average Thetan span. It should say, in this spiral. Then you enter the meshed universe, the first, from the entrance to the first time you decide you aren't anymore is maybe 100 million years, and the next time it's maybe 50 million years, the next time it's 10 million years, the next time it's 800,000 years, and the next time, so on, and all of a sudden you'll find spirals kicking around here now that are as little as 3,000. Between recognition of a new identity and secession of that identity, the average, the person that's around right about now, considered himself to be a new identity about 35,000 to 50,000 years ago, and some are much shorter than that. And I don't know how long this particular spiral will last. It's a very, very peculiar thing, extremely peculiar, that the differences you find in people very markedly follow the differences in spiral length through which they're running. But they're going through this cycle, creation, growth, conservation, decay, and death, right here in one lifetime. Now we look back on the whole track, we find them going through it on one spiral at a time, and we find the spirals getting longer and longer as they go earlier and earlier. In other words, we see a picture of shortening spans. And not very many years ago, you could probably remember, not too many years ago, a few thousand, you could probably remember clearly having been throughout the duration of the spiral. Maybe about the third or fourth spiral, you had a clear memory of the other two. You were just saying, I'm not that anymore. Well, now try and get a pretty clear to remember his childhood. Just this little tiny lifespan like that. You say, remember your father? What father? Now, he's just getting packed up with mist, less and less able to control it, less and less able to control it, less and less big, considering his own idea of his own bigness. And he's on his way out. Less and less, shorter and shorter. Well, what's this less and less big and this shorter and shorter spirals have to do with it? Well, it has a lot to do with it. It's simply his havingness is his time. And if his havingness is his time, naturally, when he eventually only has, he figures he only has a few years at a time, why, he's about centimeter high. Most Thetans consider themselves something like about a centimeter big. Some Thetans consider themselves to be a foot or two in diameter. Some are a full meter. You want to watch these full meter-sized boys. They're a little bit hard to get out because they figure out everybody else is a dot, and they ought to be able to get out as a dot, and they can't get out as a dot, and they have a feeling like there's something more there in the body, and they figure that then they think they're the body. big joke. Hey, finally, they get outside and they find out they're about a meter tall. Very amazing. Their concept to themselves is big. Just before you found out about the second dynamic, you considered yourself about 250 feet high. You're big. You had lots of endurance. You had lots of quality of duration. You had lots of time. You weren't hurried about anything. Right after the first time you ever got connected with a body, you probably felt like maybe you were about 4 feet high. It's quick, the difference. Because what took place in there? Thirst for energy. You didn't think much of energy before that time. Well, energy was energy. You could take it or leave it alone. Something like, this fellow, he goes along half his life saying, I can take whiskey or leave it alone. And the difference is he's never taken a drink. And then he takes a good, solid slug, and he's worse the next one. He's all set now. He's gone. He drink himself to death very rapidly. Well, it was kind of like that. You never saw any point in energy until the second dynamic came along, and then you said, I have to have this. Well, the second you said, I have to have this sensation, you said, I have to have this energy, and it's not my energy. I have to have some other energy in order to get this sensation. All right, this sensation, then, is going to plot itself out in such a way that it will eventually become an object. So one has the object of his affections after a while. And you get all sorts of manifestations coming out of this. Have to have. But a person is in inverse proportions and a size to his desire. A person's desire is big, it will follow that he gets small. The desire buried in most pre-clears is something they've lost contact with. They don't experience this desire anymore, but you just start to dredge them up. And you get off the first 15 or 20 ridges thick, you know, and put your foot on their throat and pull off the next 10 or 12 feet and keep parking this stuff and have lines of dump trucks taking it away. And you keep bailing them out and bailing them out, and all of a sudden they'll uncover a desire. As the Thetan starts up the line and starts into bigness again, he starts emoting it. If you don't watch him, he'll just start right into action again on that level. He'll start into action on a level where he isn't even vaguely capable of supporting action. You see him next session, he's back in his body again, he's stuck, he can't do anything. And you say, well, all right, and you take off a block more ridges, and you get him all bailed out, and you say, all right, now this time let's just take it easy and not fool around with a lot of things until the next session, he's in twice as hard. You say, what's this fellow doing? Well, he's taking off. His desire is far, far in advance of his capability to answer it. And so he'll start up scale. He doesn't even really feel the desire. He doesn't even begin to feel the desire before he goes into action. Then he's into action. He's doing this. He's doing that. He's no shape to do it. And off he goes again. You got him back in your hands. Now you'll notice pre-clears doing this rather consistently. They're going in. Their desire is such, and the desire enmeshed itself. This stuff all says, want me. The desire is such that you get an echoing proposition there, and he wants to go right back and see, do I agree with this? Oh, I can't be any good. I don't agree with this well enough. Let's see if I can agree with this better. Of course, that's what's wrong with him, you see. Agree, agree, agree. So the second he comes out, now he has to figure out, agree, agree, agree. Do I see everything right? Is it all right? Is everything all squared around? Do I have all? Yeah, that's good. That's good. I got all that said? You sure I got this said? He's on his way out here now to do this, to do that, and to acquire this, acquire that. You'll be surprised. I bet you'll have a Thetan that'll go out to conquer the world. Well, I mean, just not psychotic, but perfectly friendly, cheerful about the whole thing. He's going out and own the world. And let's see, you'll find him flying around trying to figure out, now let's see who owns the world, and we'll influence them to make over deeds, and they'll do this, and they'll do that. Own, see? He gets the full impact of innate, insensate desire, really, in the earth itself. And he'll echo to it. He'll say, here I go. Well, actually, a Thetan has terrific latitude in which to be pretty batty. He has enormous latitude. He has freedom in terms of emotion and desire and so on. And he doesn't have restrictions. So he doesn't have to be very sensible. The desire to be sensible is not as great then. And there are levels before he really does get sensible, knows what he's doing, when you'll say, why in the name of the Lord did I ever start to clear this person in the first place? They start coming up the sub-zero tone scale. Yeah, they're getting up sub, and they get to protect, which is really defend, on the sub-zero tone scale. Of course, they have to admit something is destructible before they defend it. And the first postulate then is, it can be destroyed, now I must defend it. So, it can be destroyed is the first postulate about this, must be answered. So, it can be destroyed, I must defend it, also says it's going to be destroyed, because you have a senior postulate. If you ever seen any of these people around that were busy defending, they'll destroy whatever they're defending. The stuff they're defending is it gets in horrible condition. They're on the death side of the organism cycle. And they get way over on the death side there, and they'll say, defend. I must kill to defend, and they work out in this direction. I must defend it. It's destructible, they're saying all this time. It's destructible. It can be destroyed. And they're actually saying it really isn't much good. And they treat it that way. You'll find these people, they keep themselves poor most of the time. They keep themselves very poor. You can give them a Rolls Royce, and they grow chickens in it. It's true. They will misuse the object. And if anybody wants to come around and take off that Rolls Royce, he's liable to get his head blown off with a double barrel shotgun. That Rolls Royce is going to be defended to its death. And it's always true that you find these people defending to its death. For instance, religion today has been terrific reason for beingness and everything else. There's nothing wrong with religion. It's been defended too often. It's just been defended about one dozen times too often. And the people that are most defensive about the whole thing have the worst setups. And those people who aren't defensive at all about it, they're messed with relationship to religions pretty good. Catholic Church messed is in awfully good shape. And you never can really get a Catholic to defend anything. He's got the idea, it is, he is. Life is, they interested. They've got it down. They've got a good, solid ritual there. They've got well practiced and so forth. I often thought, you make something just a little bit better. It ceases to exist. You can always make something just a little too good, just a little bit better. The painter, he paints his painting, and he's all set now with this beautiful painting, and so on. He just can't resist that last spot of white paint. And he puts that on, and he's got to erase that. And he has been erasing that. He gets some turpentine on something else, so he has to redo that. And he gets that redone, and that doesn't look good, so it throws the corner out of balance. What he's done is he's taken his original design and intention and twisted it. If you want to unmake anything, all you have to do is take its original design and intention and just give it a slight curve. And after that, it never quite goes back together again because nobody ever spots this slight curve. All right. That's true in all design work. I mean, you can work out a plant that'll make tin cans. And as long as a half a dozen engineers, something like that, sit down together and they go over this whole thing point by point, and then as long as nobody touches those plans afterwards, that plant will make tin cans. But if it doesn't, if those plans aren't put into execution from that level, then you have trial and error entering in. And the next thing you know, why, the gimme-gahoojits have to be placed someplace else. And nobody noticed that completely wiped out the tank for tinning. And the whole plant will get built, and there was no tank for tinning in there or something. I mean, just tiny alteration. There's a dam down in Australia, I think, that was beautifully planned, one of the most beautifully designed dams I think was ever built. It's down there back of Sydney. It has one slight failure, is after they got it all built, they didn't situate it in a place where it picks up the river. slight omission in planning. Beautiful dam, though. I expected it one day. Well, it may sound you a little bit off the groove, but it really isn't. Is your subject of Havingness regulates the amount of time and the amount of desire for mest which a person puts into effect will wind up in his acquisition of mest. And when he acquires enough mest, he can buy forever this way very easily. But it's a completely insentient, inactive, in forever. And he's going down tone scale with this purchase. Desire acquires. You find over in the Hindu, says all you have to do to reach nirvana is just deny and not have anything. Then he sits there in a body and keeps on talking to you about this. And I guess that was as much as anything else what got me when I was a kid. If you train the body to be motionless, so on, they're trying to take their bodies with them. And that can't be done. I tried to levitate bodies, so on. They don't levitate. There's just too much desire on the part of Earth for that body. And that body agrees too much with the desire of Earth for anybody to come along with little tiny weak postulates and say, it'll now lift. No. And then the engineer feels very forthright and self-righteous immediately. He says, you see, if it agrees with the material universe, if it's workable, that's all that counts. That's perfectly true. But that is also the road to Armageddon, as far as any individual is concerned. If you agree hard enough, and this is why your engineer can get terribly logical, and then as life goes on, get awfully unhappy. Because at first he's a very smart cookie. He's a very, very smart fellow. He can figure all this out and arrange everything and get it all set and plan it out in advance and square it around and make the thing work. And the next thing you know, he has enough mess on his hands where it's kind of making him work. And then he doesn't quite notice the borderline. He's no longer in command of mess. Mess is now in command of him. And then he gets kind of unhappy about the whole thing, and he tries to agree harder. Well, there's a level of the tone scale where, well, imagine this. You've agreed, you are willing, you're in 100% agreement on something, and then somebody keeps punishing you in order to make you do it. How would that be? You're completely in agreement that you ought to do this thing, 100% in agreement that you ought to do this thing, and then somebody keeps on punishing you to make you do it. A guy gets frantic after a while. He's being compelled to do something he's perfectly willing to do, and the people who are compelling him won't stop compelling him. Now, that's one level of the tone scale. Now let's get a little bit lower level of the tone scale, an even more insidious level of the tone scale. Supposing no matter what you did, the compulsion and punishment continued. You were in perfect agreement. You did exactly what you were told. You did everything you were supposed to do. You did it the best way you possibly knew how, and the punishment continued, and the punishment continued. And then the next thing you know, you were willing to do anything, and the punishment continued, so it really didn't do any good for you to do anything, did it? Now, where would that level be on the tone scale? Well, that's just above the chaos of apathy. If they can get a person down to that level, he manufactures nothing but chaos. And from there on, he's a dead one. He's not much use to anything or anybody. If you can imagine somebody under consistent torture, they got him on the rack, he gives them all the information he knows. Gives them everything he knows, and they keep on torturing him. And he says, "What I told you everything I knew." They say, "Yeah, I know. We don't want to know anymore." Click, click, click. They just keep right on pulling him to pieces. That's the messed universe at work on the low level of the tone scale. Because it doesn't matter how much you agree with the messed universe. It doesn't happen to be sentiently directed. It's on a sentient initial impulse. And the initial impulse is one thing. But you have right in present time that initial impulse acting on the accumulation of all this, and it does not matter how much you agree with it. You can agree with it and agree with it and agree with it, and if the initial impulse depends for its effectiveness on you, on your own force and no other force. Ho ho. You get the idea.
So you eventually find out the horrible lesson anybody learns about the messed universe if he doesn't know the road out of it. The horrible lesson is diminish your own force and accept messed universe force. Because if you are found to be manufacturing force, you'll just manufacture more force. And it doesn't work anyhow in this universe, although it's very desirable. Chaos. So what you want to do is you keep diminishing your own force, diminish your own force, diminish your own force. Do less and do less and do less to get along better. To get along better. Of course, as a person does less, he's granting destructive power to the illusion. He's saying, it can destroy, it can destroy, it can destroy. After an individual has carefully started manufacturing energy by postulates, he's very carefully manufacturing energy, he's got them at an exact wavelength of the messed universe, and he's hooked them all up just exactly where they are. He's agreed with the messed universe perfectly, and he keeps manufacturing energy. And he says, where's all this energy coming from? He keeps manufacturing it, and he's all tuned up, and he says, the messed universe is bad. Now, what am I going to do about this? How can I get out of this? Well, obviously, what's the trouble is there's too much force here. The joke is, it's his force. And so he just sort of has to back off and use less and less force. And if he uses little enough force, he figures he'll get by somehow. Young man of about 18 is always willing to go out and conquer the world, usually. You could say, what should be Britain's policy against India? He says, shoot them all down like dogs. Now, what would you like to do? Well, if you had an appointment to be appointed to, what would you do? Well, if you appoint me governor general or regent of something or other, I'll show you some action. Of course, I have to have a few troops. He's always willing to employ force. Dictatorships and that sort of thing depend to a very marked degree upon the willingness of youth to employ force. All right, now you have this terrific amount of force being employed. Well, after a while, a horrible thing happens in this universe. There's a horrible little law about energy that you really ought to be cognizant of. And that is that it backfires. There is a kickback to it. There is always a recoil. You shoot somebody so he hurts, you get the backlash of his hurt on top of your wrath. You're mad at him, so you hurt him. So when you hurt him, there's an energy escapement from him which hits you, and you'll hold it because you're mad at him. The messed universe has the insidious and horrible habit of backfiring. Energy is a two-way channel and is never anything else. If you cause something on an energy channel, you'll get a backflow up that channel because you've established a communication line. That's something to remember. Communication lines always operate in two directions, at least. You put something along a communication line in one direction. This is probably one of the primary definitions of space we're getting into here. If you put something on a communication line in one direction, you're going to get something back on the line. Not the same thing. You're just going to get something back on that line. You open up a communication line. Therefore, if you were to open up a communication line to everyone who was mad at you, in this lifetime, everyone who might even vaguely be angry with you or had ever been angry with you, for you to keep this line open, all kinds of things will flow back at you in order to hold that line open to try to settle their anger with you. The answer to such things, cut line. But that's not a good answer either, because they demand the line be open most of the time. Now, the point I'm making here is if you hit with a sledgehammer a group of cells, and you hit them hard with a sledgehammer, you would get a back shock of their departure from this life form. You're blowing up ridges, so you're going to get a splash of the ridge. What's in the ridge? Part of the ridge would be, I hurt.
There's nothing morally wrong with your going around and twisting people's heads off. But after you've done this for a while, your auditor would have the sorry task of scraping off of you all of the "I hurt." And you would eventually start saying, "I hurt." You don't hurt. I mean, you weren't hurt at all. This is the interaction on the eight dynamics. That's the overt act and the motivator. Now, we've got an impulse goes out this way. It doesn't matter what that impulse is. There's going to be some return on that impulse. One of the neatest ways to wipe out an army that you didn't particularly like would be to give it a wonderful weapon. Good hand weapon. If you were to issue to the Bulgarian army or somebody, if you were to issue to this group of men electronic hand weapons that had a nice kick to them, nice electronic hand weapon that would just render non-compos combatus anybody that you ran into, gee, would you have some good work as an auditor in a very short time? Because they'd be batty. They would be in horrible shape. In the first place, when that weapon goes off, it's all right to have a shield. But, you know, the shield never quite protects everything. You get a big enough shield to really protect a man, and it's too big and clumsy. So you get a hand weapon, that's got to be a small shield. The fellow said, "Well, if you hold them out there, it's all right." And there'll be a few rays would come off such a beam that would come back and hit the fellow sort of up here somewhere, or the toes of his boots, and certainly his hand, and he'd keep getting this shock. He'd just keep getting these shocks. He's sensitized to the shock then. He's sensitized to a current. And as it went out and hit people and hurt people, you'd get a backflow up the same current line. Gee, that army'd be in bad shape quick. And what do you know? This is one of the primary weapons, whether you want to accept whole track or not, is one of the primary weapons in space. You process this out of preclears, which I mentioned in passing. In this universe, when you open a communication line, it always has two ends. It always has two flows, always back and forth. So you hurt, you get hurt. At first, it was something on this order. You'd hurt somebody, and then 100 million years later, somebody would happen to hurt you, and you would say, you know, there's some vague similarity to those two incidents. And then on the spiral 5 or spiral 6 or something like that, you would have hurt somebody, and then they hurt you. It's getting a little bit tougher now, you see, because you've got it getting stacked. You hurt somebody, they hurt you, and you would sort of have a feeling like, I wonder if, I just don't feel good about that. It's possibly because I was hurt, still differentiating. And now, on the 15th or 20th spiral, something like that, you hurt somebody. And what do you know? You hurt like hell. I mean, right like that. He never hurt you. You just hurt somebody and you hurt. It's just automatic. Boom. Anytime you do an overt act, you get the motivator. Boom, right there. Dead X. So, I mean, it's just automatic. It would work as thoroughly as this. You get a pre-clear out here and just get him to go and slap somebody. And then process out his own cheek being slapped. It's that close together. And that packed in. And that is simply energy, communication lines, and flows. The best reason for this is when one puts something out, it's a have. And he gets a have. Or it's a not have, and he does a not have. So he keeps all these communication lines in suspense. He keeps them all together and bundles them all up tight. He's making matter for this universe. Great stuff. And he gets to a point where he doesn't care which end of the terminal he is. He's that undifferentiative about an energy flow. And he gets that undifferentiative about havingness. You go down to the spin bin down here, you'll find more people who are clutching to their bosoms things which other people don't clutch to their bosoms. It'll quite rattle you to give an estimate of the number of things those people think they have to have and the things which they don't think of any value anymore. We can't differentiate on what's good and what's bad, or what's haveable and what's not haveable. And that's very, very true of mess. This mess doesn't know what's haveable or what isn't haveable. It's a created piece of energy, and so on. And it has very definite characteristics, that sort of thing, but it's all kind of mixed in there together. The fellow that would come along and bump his head against that corner would consider it not haveable, and the fellow who wants a mandolin to put something on considers it haveable. Anybody can assign a value then to it. But it, and probably by this time that being that made it, is no longer capable of assigning any values. No longer even vaguely capable of assigning a value. But the value is assigned, and that is the primary essence of being an effect. So, how does this work out in cause and effect? You shoot somebody, boom. That's all right, your cause, in this universe, your cause. Next person, you shoot him, boom. Good, your cause. You say, well, I wonder how he felt. And then skip it. Along about the 100,000th fellow, you shoot him and you'd feel like you had a bullet straight between your own eyes. To be a cause, you're instantaneously an effect, aren't you? If you become cause, you're instantaneously an effect, practically, for all intents and purposes. Well, what's the best thing to do to prevent this? The best thing to do to prevent this is not be a cause anymore. And mind you, that's just the middle ground. You've got the rest of the chute to run down. That's halfway up this curve, the curve of creation, conservation, alteration, and destruction. That's only halfway through retribution. When you cause something, you're an effect. That's just halfway gone. There's the next 76 trillion years to suffer downhill on. So most people are in that state on this particular turn of the spiral. If they were to go out and kick somebody solidly or something like that, they'd go home, and in a day or two, at the outside, they would develop a terrible stomachache. You use postulate processing on some preclear without his knowing what you did, and you're going to have a tough time. Now, you say, this girl has an awful... this case that was reported to me, an auditor went out and... Archer came back in and said, I'm never again going to use postulate processing on anybody unless I have first told them what I was doing. I'm cured. I went and I asked this girl. She had a bad stomachache, had a chronic stomachache for years, and I asked her when she desired to have a stomachache, and she couldn't remember any time, and I asked her when she wanted somebody else to have a stomachache, and she says, it's my sister. Two or three years ago, she did something rather to me about a bull I had, and I had this terrific impulse to kick her in the stomach. And the doctor said, well, how do you feel? Well, what do you know? It's gone. Well, how do you feel about your sister? Well, if I had her here, I'd want to kick her in the stomach again. Boom! I had the stomachache right back again. And the auditor couldn't get the preclear's attention enough after all his emotional excitement to do anything else about it. In, out, boom, boom. She didn't know she was being processed. Didn't even have any vague idea she was. All right. When you get this fast proposition of stimulus response, that's getting into stimulus response, isn't it? You cause something, you become an effect. When you cause something, you become an effect. Therefore, the best thing to do to have other things become an effect is to let them cause something. Well, that's the rest of the spiral. Now, if you want somebody to be badly affected, engineer him around until he'll cause something. And he'll become an effect in this universe. Right now, you let him become an effect. Well, of course, you become an effect too, but that is a method of casting off all responsibility for being cause, isn't it? You just let other people be cause. Blame them so they will be cause. And elect other people cause because you know why. You know by experience they'll become an effect, and you just sort of feel this. So you know they'll be in horrible shape if they start causing things, and you could just really sit back, although you're, of course, in a dim sort of a twilight of agony yourself, And to be very definitely amused about this sort of thing. Ran an incident one time that had to do with a fellow who ruined a nobleman. He ruined a nobleman. He let the nobleman challenge him to a duel and kill him. And he did it. He did all this by going out and getting a much shorter sword than the nobleman's sword. That's simple, isn't it? Of course, when they came around and viewed the body, they found out the nobleman had used a much longer sword, so it wasn't a regulation duel, and this disgraced the nobleman, didn't it? Well, it ruined him. It doesn't impress you, because in this day and age, we're not particularly concerned about that, but they evidently were at this other time. The guy laid on the couch and roared with laughter over this terrific joke. He played on his nobleman. Another fellow permitted himself to get killed in a duel, and just as he was dying, he told the nobleman that really his wife wasn't really very good in bed. Of course, he wasn't being killed for this, and the nobleman couldn't bring him back to life again, and it left it all unrevenged. Now, those are very, very high-pointed instances of this, but they go on all the time here. They go on all the time. There'll be people who walk around, and when they hand you something, they won't quite hand it to you wrong, but they won't quite hand it to you right. And you reach out to take hold of it, and they will let go of it at just exactly the wrong time so as to make you drop it. And then they can help you pick it up. There are people going around who will just work hard on you until you will just knock them to pieces. You will get angry at them and so forth, and then they look and look sad. Now, the reason, this is another method of survival, don't you see? If they can make you be mean enough to them, why then you get mean enough to them, and if this kind of finished them off and hurt them, then you would do a life continuum for them. So it's a method for survival, and it's an invitation to do life continuums. And that's probably the mechanism immediately behind the life continuum. And by the way, if you find somebody doing a life continuum for somebody, you know the person they were doing a life continuum for really did provoke to an enormous extent a lot of overt acts. They say, I'm doing this life continuum. I know I'm in grandmother's valence. I know I'm doing a life continuum for grandmother. But she was a nice, sweet old lady. They all these times that Grandma had the insidious habit of some kind of cough syrup made out of mustard or something of the sort. She thought a quart of it was what cured one. And Grandma had the horrible habit of actually being very prim and very well controlled and wouldn't let one swear and wouldn't let one talk and wouldn't let one walk and wouldn't let one eat. But Grandma was quite an ally. Grandma was practically making certain that somebody did a life continuum on her. You might look at it like that. Therefore, somebody's going to survive with her mannerisms. Interesting point. It's just the reversal of the overt act, the reason behind possibly the overt act. But this cause and effect I'm pointing up to you is eventually a person will be so willing to let somebody else be cause that he doesn't realize he's making himself an effect. How solid an effect can one become? That solid an effect. He becomes matter. His ability to differentiate and so forth becomes just as good as this Mandelpleiss's ability to differentiate, which is no good at all. Now we're looking at this gradient scale, and we're seeing that we agree with the laws of the physical universe. The first level of agreement is, yeah, we'll use energy. Well, let's use energy. We'll all use energy. That's right. We must remember to communicate with force, with energy. Communicate with energy. None of more of this instantaneous stuff whereby I have it tomorrow and I'm just getting up and I get your message, which you get there now, and all this scrambled up stuff, and this was day before yesterday, and you say I didn't tell you, but you know I did tell you because day before yesterday, now you can remember it. The guy's gotten a communication in day before yesterday, you see. It required so much trouble. I mean, you had to differentiate so much. So let's remember to communicate with force, with
with energy. Let's use energy as a communication channel.
That's better. Now we've got a two-way communication channel. We always know who's communicating.
Not like in the old days. That was kind of exhausting. Everybody imitated everybody else's voice. You couldn't have a good identity. Oh, lots of things wrong with that kind of communication. So what we'll do is we'll agree to communicate with, well, that's, of course, we have to have emotion, and that would be the form of, and that's on the laws of force, or so-and-so, and that's the way it is, and we've got this energy flowing back and forth here, and you agree, and I agree, and that's right, and then we have a nice universe. Well, you agree, and I agree, and let's agree. Let's agree. Let's agree. And it gets to a point after a while, toward the end of a spiral, where a person realizes that it doesn't matter what he does in terms of agreement. Hey, he just can't agree that much. There's no further thing to agree to, and he's still being more and more, practically day by day, an effect. You can probably see this fellow getting down on his knees and saying, please, is there anything else to which I can agree? No. The punishment just keeps up. He still has his lumbago and his godwhatkas and his wheezes, and they're getting worse. And a fellow just before death, a deathbed confession is always valuable, because a fellow will give up any piece of information. He will agree to answer anything. He will agree to sign any. And also, the law doesn't let deathbed wills go through without a raised eyebrow, because a fellow will agree to almost anything when he's dying. And he'll confess to truth anything that he's ever done, anything. He'll give up anything. That's the final epileptiform seizure of I agree. And of course, just before the being that made this probably became as solid as this, he said, oh, I realize at last there's nothing I can agree to now further than I've agreed to. 100% agreement. How do you become an effect? Well, you just get 100% agreement all the way down the line over 76 trillion years. And you've got marble or something. Very interesting, isn't it? Well, it means that this desire to have is what backs up and motivates and starts in one's desire to agree. If you can't communicate both ways, there won't be any time, and therefore there won't be anything to have. So you agreed that it was valuable to have something to have. And that was the first moment of the game. Somebody interested you, probably with some kind of an illusion. Or you interested somebody with some kind of an illusion. You got this idea, and you got an interchange in this idea, and they agreed that it was nice to have. And at that moment, the illusion had a little bit of duration. It had as much duration as one desired to have it. He learned to feed enough energy into this illusion to keep it alive. And so, of course, it continued as long as he addressed his attention to it, as long as he intended to have it. And this universe is doing the same thing, only it's getting awfully heavy. All right. When we look over then, when we look over this desire to have, we also see that it says desire to agree. So we get agree, disagree. Now, what you disagree on is invariably not to have. You're sitting in a tree or hanging by your tail or something of the sort, and an alligator comes up to you and he says, how desirable. And you say, I'm sorry, this owned property, big sign, don't have. You don't desire to eat monkeys. You don't desire this. Okay, so, oh, yes, I do too, clank. And you say, well, I'll have to figure that out a little more positively. Now, desire to have, desire not to have. Enforced having. Now, it's just a straight desire. The alligator liking a little snack, that's just straight desire. But it's the straight desire of an energy form. An energy form. He wants energy. People either want energy or the product made of energy. So we've got our alligator says, I want it. But supposing such a thing as hunger gets invented. Hunger is an enforcing desire.
one will sometimes force a body to desire by making it hunger. That's you've got to have. And inhibit is you must not have. Well, in the one automatically that's doing the inhibiting is under attack. So you have inhibition coming out as bottom tone scale. And but at the same time, inhibit not having is also bottom tone scale. Let's fix it up so that people don't get this idea that they should not have. Let's fix it up so they keep getting the idea to have. And let's inhibit this not have thing. Let's whet their appetites up a little bit. See, that's just inhibition on the reverse side. You get that? You could desire to have, the alligator desires to have, but the monkey almost as fervently desires the alligator not to have. And the monkey is inhibiting the alligator from having. And the alligator is inhibiting the monkey one way or the other, so that the monkey will not have this idea about not have. He's trying to inhibit the not have idea of the monkey. Well, it's very nice. You walk into the parlor, you walk down the sand or something of the sort, and you know that life isn't worth living anyway, and so on, and it'll all be over in a moment, clank. And in other words, he gives him sales talk. The horrors of life and how a monkey doesn't want to go on living anyway, and it's all too burdensome, and so on. So we get a direct scale out of this. And we get the three forms of havingness, which is desire to have, which is, of course, with a negative, desire not to have. We get enforced having and enforced not having. And we get inhibited having and inhibited not having. When you go out here today and tell people you didn't want any ration book anymore, that you were you were not going to eat anymore, or something of this sort, people have tried to inhibit you doing that. The police would try to inhibit you if you committed suicide or tried to commit suicide. There's a law against committing suicide. They're inhibiting your not having. Now, therefore, you have these three levels, and you have them on this cycle of the organism, and that in energy manifestation, start, stop, and change. It is space beingness, energy doingness, and object havingness. All these scales add up to all of these scales. So you can run any kind of a cross run on any dynamic interacting with any other dynamic, and you get a very easily plotted center of a tremendous number of variables. You can make these variables out of this material I'm giving you. All the variables of which life's composed out of these materials. You won't find factors in life sitting someplace outside of these categories. They're sitting there, and it's under one of these. Now you start processing somebody, and what do you find? Their case will plot out somewhere on this point. And what is in common about all these cases is that they are in a state of agreement with the mess universe, and that agreement consists of havingness, and it consists of their continuing to possess time and havingness, and it continues to make them hold on to, as though they were objects, their own thoughts and postulates, even this. And that agreement then winds up with everything becoming as heavy as matter, including a symbol, like a word. And to a psychotic, a symbol is solid. A minute is solid. If you see a psychotic sometimes sitting, sorting out imaginary things which are in front of him, he's probably got a stack of minutes. And they probably feel very real to him. But you see, he's in the last stages of I agree. I agree. He doesn't know where the steamboat got off the river. He hasn't got any idea why he's sitting over in the middle of this desert, because he's agreed all the way through and outrageously. Now, he became psychotic simply on one of those points. He desired to have and he couldn't have. He desired something not to have and it insisted on having. And he went boom. You can always trace the psychosis to that. He's always stuck someplace in the time track. He's trying to desire, enforce, or inhibit having or not having somewhere on the time track, not in present time. His facsimiles have gotten very heavy to him. They're actual messed. And he's caught up in messed. He just has the sensation of being caught in messed. If you were to run a meter around his vicinity, a very sensitive meter, you would find the messed. It isn't anything very exciting. It just doesn't agree with anything else. Now, he gets down below a point of, he says, well, I just surrender. I give up. I haven't any responsibility for the universe. I can't even think. I can't even do anything. I'm no danger in anybody. I can't be caused under no circumstances be caused. I am only an effect. I have no responsibility. I have no force. I can't use force. I can't control it. On and on and on. He's just saying, I'm insane. That's what insanity is. You just add all of that up, and you have the manifestations of insanity. Well, there's a thing known as validation. That thing takes on an existence which is validated. And that thing tends to go out of existence which is invalidated. Take an artist and you invalidate his artwork long enough where he'll stop working in the field of the arts. Invalidation, validation. Simply that thing to which you give positive attention becomes and exists. It's a have, then. And that thing, which has no attention given to it, so on, ceases to exist. Now, if you try to invalidate with force, of course, you seize the thing. Because you put force up against force, it's got a two-way communication line, and it'll backfire. Force begets force. It's worse than that. Is you start nailing force with force, and you've got two forces opposed, and they will suspend. Because it's a double flow. One against the other, the person won't have the time he's supposed to have. Excuse me. He has time. He has too much time. He's got the time in the other force and the time in his own force, and it's interlocked. There's time. He has by trying not to have. And that's what's wrong with blocking an energy flow instead of letting one go on by. If it's a dangerous energy flow, just let it go on by. Because if you block it, you're saying it's dangerous. And you're validating its dangerousness. It doesn't even exist unless you say it's dangerous. Now, it's all very well for you to go out in the middle of the street here and tell one of these cars, so on, but there's a lot of other things in agreement than you as a thetan. The four parts of beingness are there in the middle of the street. And that's how the physical universe kept proving it to you. There were four parts of beingness, but they were all you. And at these four parts of beingness, the thetan, the body, all their different parts. If it could identify all of these four parts as one part, then it could prove by any of the other four parts that the rest of them were just messed. Do you see? So you couldn't go out in the street and say that Lori doesn't exist and the Lori wouldn't hit you. Oddly enough, you can go out in the street as a thetan and say that Lori doesn't exist. And although it may continue to exist for the lorry driver and the rest of the world, it doesn't do anything to you. Handy, isn't it? So we've got validation and invalidation bracketed right there. So what do you validate? You validate those things you want to exist or want to be, and you validate those postulates which you want to exist, which you want to be. And how do you invalidate? Conceive a nothingness about. Don't fight it, just conceive a nothingness about it. Just don't go around saying it doesn't exist and then saying, well, it really doesn't exist. It doesn't exist, you know. I mean, I'm sure it doesn't exist. I insist that it doesn't exist. That's validating it. That's a, yup, it exists. But you have to be able to assume a calm enough mean and a high enough level of survival potential in yourself as a thetan before you can suddenly grandly ignore utterly something. And you can, just by the process of ignoring it, it disappears. That's a good feeling when you can do that. Well, you're sure calm when you can do that. All right, here comes then a process. Right straight out of all of that a process adds up that says this. If you process the material universe, energy, space, and time, in complete agreement with the way it's supposed to operate, it says you will validate the material universe. And after so many hours of processing, you will all of a sudden find maybe 500 or 2,000 hours of processing, you'll find your preclear will get worse if you do nothing but process facsimiles and incidents. Why? Because you carried forward the whole business of agreement. For a while you could do something to him, and he got ahead on an educational basis, and then all of a sudden he went wrong. How would he go wrong on? He just ran into the fact that he was agreeing, and you were processing agreeing, and you just validated the material universe, and you validated it and validated it and validated, and it's saying it's there, it's there, it's there. And the preclear starts saying, yes, I agree, I agree, I agree, I agree. Boom. Very, very bad. Now, on the assist level, patching up a person, patching up a body in one lifetime, that sort of thing, sure, doesn't hurt anybody. But we don't want to process people that long. Dickens with that. And furthermore, we want to process the preclear himself, the Thetan. He doesn't process this way worth a darn. So what do we do about all this? It's certain that we must lead the preclear to disagree more and more calmly with the laws of the material universe in which he is being drowned. He must be led to reverse his direction of flow, which is itself reality. Now, that sounds awfully horrible, but it is not. We must lead him to direct his attention then into more and more flexible limits so that he's less and less pinned down by the arbitrary of time, which is the arbitrary of havingness. All right.